Proudly presented by Provident Payments, this is Hometown Heroes, celebrating everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and our visit with Navy Cross recipient Harry Zinzer of Hanford, California, originally from Flint, Michigan. They called him Harry the Horse when he started running back for Wheaton College. And a few short years later, with his wife back home in the States, Harry was flying search and rescue missions with the Sea Devils of HC-7 during the Vietnam War. He started out in UH-2A Clementines, but then transitioned to a heavier helicopter, the HH-3A Bad Mother, which is what he would end up flying on August 6th, 1972. A day this decorated pilot will never forget.
Well, I had two rescues already. Well, but he had one. Next time we fly, they put us together. This is on a log mission. Log mission is a logistics mission to drop off supplies. We're headed up towards the north, towards Oswald, which is about 200 miles from the DMZ. So we're flying up north. We're actually got classified materials we have to take up to ships that are near Oswald. Oswald is a station that's up north. So we go there, we drop off materials to different ships. We still have materials on board for the next day. Now we took off from Midway, we had to land on Saratoga. We knew that when we launched from Midway, because the ships, they change every so often. Out of the Yankee Station, they change. We swap, and so we had to take out all our personal gear with us too. It means letters from home and stuff like that.
So you weren't expecting that you guys are going to be rescuing anybody this day?
No, not at all. Mm-hmm. So we get up to North Star, we have our personal gear, plus we have confidential gear on board helicopter. And we land there for the night, normal routine day, normal landing. Our crew was kind of there, they hit the rack. I usually stayed up a little bit later and I was the last one to go to Iraq. So before I retired for the evening, I went into CIC, this Combat Information Center. She says, so she says, hey, Lieutenant, says, go over here. She says, they're getting ready to launch one of your big mothers overland, to go overland for a rescue overland. I said, what? She says, yeah, South Star, 2 miles to the south of us. We had a helicopter on board there. They're ready to launch them. And I says, Chief, that'll never happen. He says, we don't go over land. He says, yeah, they're getting ready to launch them over land. And the radios crackled. And we heard him say, Red Crown, that's call sign for South Star. I said, Red Crown. He says, yeah, have you launched your big mother yet? I said, no, semi. Then they came back later, about a minute later. This is Red Crown. Says, our big mother's down. We heard a radio call. It says, break, break. It says, Oswald, this is Jehovah. Launch your big mother now. Jehovah was call sign for the Admiral when he spoke on the radio. We have people who have been through the entire Vietnam War, they've never heard Jehovah on the radios. We were in twice that night. First time was when he told the Red Crown to launch a big mother. She says, what? Yeah, it's the adjunct, Chief. I call your skipper. He has an emergency flight course we have to launch. He says, I can't call my skipper. I says, why can't you call your skipper? He says, well, she's orders not to bother the skipper at night. I says, you got to call him tonight. Or I tell you, you won't have a job tomorrow. And I think I was right. Because they called emergency flight corps and CO was at the helm when we took off. I know he was. So I was the first one out to the Hilo. Had a flashlight with me. I pre-flighted the helicopter. So I took the engine covers off. I got in the center seat and I had the number. One engine started by the time my cobot got out there. So he says, what's up? I says, hey, we're launching. Now back then, when we took off from a non-aviation ship, you could not land on it at night. We did not have night vision goggles back then at all. We could take off from a non-aviation ship, but we could not land. So I knew we were going to head back. I knew we'd be landing on the Midway, 200 miles away. We had 3 hours of gas on board. We'd fly 100 miles, about 100 knots. It took 2 hours to get to the carrier. But we had to stay low because we were up in Haiphong Harbor, and we had to fly below the radar. So we're about 10 miles off the shore. So we're flying at 500 feet. We have radio comms with the ship for about 30 miles. So we flew about another 40 miles before we had comms again. So I briefed our crew and said, what's up? I said, crew, the A-7 pilot has been shot down over North Vietnam. They want to launch our big mother to the south, but they're down, so they're launching us. I said, what are they launching us for? So I don't know. So we launched, and we're now the primary search and rescue vehicle. And I briefed them that he had been shot down about 2 hours ago. They had not heard from him. He had to come up on voice in order for rescue to be made. We knew the area where we were shot down, heavily fortified with the North Vietnamese Army, and so we thought he had been captured. But come to find out, he had not been captured. He's a pretty savvy guy himself. First of all, he got hit by a SAM missile, surface-air missile. He saw one coming on his radar. He avoided it, but he got hit by another SAM one that he did not see. It's usually what happens. He was going through 2,000 feet uncontrolled when he bailed out. Minimum uncontrollable safe bailout altitude, as I was told later, is about 10,000 feet for an 87.
So the minimum safe altitude to bail out of an A7 is 10,000 feet. If you're bailing out less than that, there's no guarantee that you're going to survive this. And you said he was only at 2,000 feet?
He was only 2,000 feet when he bailed out.
So the odds were not in his favor?
Not at all. Uh-huh. So he got about two swings in his shooting, he was on the ground. Mm-hmm. He landed right next to his aircraft, which was a wall of fire. He heard people, gunfire, so he knew he had to get out of there right away. So he got out of his parachute right away. He ran into some small bushes. He hid there. Mm-hmm. He said within minutes, there's at least 12 NVA troops there at the wreckage site. So he said they came up this bush where he was hiding in. So they urinated in the bush. But he said it was so black out that night, he couldn't be seen. It was a black night. Mm. One of the black nights that I ever flown in. We logged to about 5 hours of instrument time, all total blackness. But it was the dark night that saved him. He said if they had a flashlight or a dog, he said he'd been captured.
But you guys don't even know if he's made it. You don't know anything about where exactly he is. So how do you eventually find out that he's alive and you have a chance to rescue him?
Well, so he didn't go over his radar for about 2 hours. But we launched. And by the time we launched, we launched 2 hours after he was shot down. And we had not heard from him. What had happened during that time is he was on the ground. He was escaping, evading. And then they left. He had to get on his radio. Well, he had moved a considerable distance. He didn't have his radio. He had put his pocket up here, flights his pocket up here. He knew he had to get his radio or be picked up. So we went to reach for his radio, and it was missing. It fell out of his pocket. So he's in rice paddies. So he crawls on his hands and feet for the next hour and a half looking for his radio. Finds about an hour and a half later. Mm. That's when he finally came up on voice. Then when we got within range of the carrier radio comms, we found out that he had come up on voice. That's what took him so long to come up on voice, though. And they said, okay, Big Mother, you're going to be ready to go in. But just before they get ready to go, here's footsteps behind him. So he calls off. He says, don't bring any heels in now. We were really low on fuel, so we had to get fuel. I already prepared for the ship to come and refuel us. Then our skipper relieved us. Our skipper, he was an old-time war vet, and he knew a lot about combat SAR himself. Commander Dave McCracken, good skipper. So we're kind of breathing. We got a sigh of relief. We're kind of easy now. We're refueling. We have to do helicopter and flight refueling from a small ship. That's not big enough. It does not have deck to land at IH. Three helicopter. So we come over the deck, burr hoist down, hook down, pick up the cable and move offside over the helicopter about 10 feet above the water, hover there alongside the ship while we take out fuel.
Okay, so when you say you're relieved by your skipper, you mean McCracken's in another helicopter and now it looks like he's going to be the one to conduct the rescue, right?
That's exactly right, yes. We were up on SAR frequency, search and rescue frequency. So now we switch off search and rescue frequency and we're on a ship's frequency to do our HIFR, our helicopter flight refueling. That was kind of hard. Found out later that the ship was not qualified, was not certified to do HIFRs. Their pump wasn't working quite right. We broke connection right away. So we don't know why we broke connection. So it takes about 10 minutes to the night IFR pattern. So we broke connection. So we had to go around and do a right-hand circle, come around the ship again. Not land, but hover over deck, pick up those again, come and set aside, 10-foot hover, hover long ship at night. Well, we broke connection again, so came around a third time, connection secure, we started pumping on fuel. I want to take on enough fuel so it'll give us 15 minutes search time, and land and get back to the ship, land with 15 minutes of fuel. That's what I was looking for. We were down below 1,000 pounds of fuel. 1,000 pounds was good for an hour, and I went an hour and a half. So we didn't have much to pump. We only had to pump on 500 pounds. But the pumps did not. We were burning fuel almost as fast as we were burning it.
So you're trying to fill up, but you're burning as much as you're taking on. So you're kind of treading water when it comes to fueling up.
Exactly right. So I switched the SAR frequency. So the rescue was going. And first thing I hear is, where's all those helicopters? What's the matter with those damn helicopters? And I'm saying, what's going on here? Then I hear over radio. Well, first helicopter went to get gas. What happened to the second helicopter? He reported low on fuel, so he went to get fuel too. What was the first one? Why isn't the first one back yet? So I get over there. The guy says, hey, night off. I said, that was the first helicopter. I'm getting fuel. We have problems getting fuel right now. I'll be there as soon as I can. So I looked at the fuel, waiting for fuel to get there and get back. So I was all interested. So I said, catch fueling, called up Dancing Commander. It's Commander Jim Ernst in an A6. He did a wonderful job that night. I called him up and said, hey, we're ready to go on in now. So now we become the primary helicopter. We're no backup now.
So if this pilot's going to get rescued, it's you guys or nobody else?
That's right. And if we went down, we had nobody to rescue us either. So we go in. Our crewman reminds me, he says, we still have our coverage of materials on board. I said, that's okay, Samansky. Let's call him Ski. I said, it's okay, Ski. Leave him right there because we're going to come back. He told me later, he said, they gave him all the confidence in the world. I said, don't throw the materials overboard. So we go over to North Vietnam. We have confidential materials on board. We have our personal gear and everything. I wasn't going to throw my personal gear overboard. So we head over land. He clicks the mic. He says, sir, would you say a prayer for us? They realize that these guys are guys that live in bars, our crewmen. They live in the bars. They didn't drink anybody under the table. He asked me to say a prayer. I said, Ski, said, I've already prayed once, but I'll pray again. Click the mic, and I prayed to the Lord to protect us. And sure enough, he did. So as we go over land, I expected all hell to break loose as soon as we crossed the beach. I report feet dry. Feet dry is when you cross the ocean. Go from over the water, you go over land. Mm-hmm. It's called feet dry. Man, said all hell to break loose. There was a single shot fired. Didn't see anything coming at us. Yeah, it was just north of the bend. Then I saw a ridge line up ahead. Karst line. And the words came to me from Psalm 121. We had to memorize Psalm 121 for our coaching and principal's class at Wheaton College. It says, I will look unto the hills from whence cometh my help. My help come from the Lord, which made the heavens and the earth. I saw those hills, and I saw that verse came right to my mind there, like I had a HUD display on it.
So we've been talking about there's a pilot, he needs to be rescued, you guys needed gas. There's a lot of things that can go wrong here. But now you're coming over land, low, so surface-to-air missiles can knock you out of the sky. And then I think your visibility isn't great either, right?
Right, the visibility is getting reduced, the cloud layer.
But you see these hills, this karst, 3,500-foot plateau, and the first thing you think of is a verse you learned in a coaching class in college?
Yes, it's just amazing how that happened. And the last part of the verse says, he that keepeth Israel shall not slumber nor sleep. He'll guide your foot, and your foot will not move. I looked down on my boot, and I started adjusting the lights in the cockpit, and there's one peanut bulb. I had a light on it, and it was shining on my boot. Should not suffer thy foot to be moved. And I looked at my foot that night, and I saw it. So I'm going to let that light shine right on my boot. My boot's going to stay there all night long. And I looked down several times in the rescue, and I saw the light shine off my boot.
I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I want to understand what the significance of that is to you. So when you look at your boot not moving, that represents the mindset that you had in that moment?
Yes. Just renewed my confidence that the Lord was with us and he's going to bring us out of this. He's going to bring us through this.
So you've got how many people on board this helicopter?
4 people on board the helicopter right now.
Yourself, your co-pilot, 2 crewmen. You've got a pilot on the ground whose life is in your hands. And then you mentioned you have all your personal materials and classified information that if the enemy gets a hand on it, could wreak a lot of damage, right?
Or get us in a lot of trouble, that's for sure.
The stakes of this mission are pretty high.
They're building up now, yes, they're building up now.
So what happened next?
So we go over land, and we now have to make an IFR descent. We're 35 feet across the ridge line, but there's now a cloud layer. There's a black night now, it's a cloud layer. We have to get below those clouds. So we set our radar altimeter 200 feet. We're going to spiral descent down through the clouds. We break out through the clouds before we hit 200 feet. As soon as we break through the clouds, we see a pencil flare go off. So, man, this is going to be a piece of cake. Found a haystack, now we're going to find a needle in a haystack. We just found a needle, so we thought, so we head for it. Our unseen commander, he says, hey, get out of there, big man, it's a trap, it's a trap, get out of there. So now we figure, oh crap, so we pull in power. We had reset our radar altimeter to 30 feet. Our radar altimeter is a Ross warning, sitting over below 30 feet. So I turn on a spotlight, just in time because there's a grove of trees ahead of us. It's about 100 feet high, we're at 30 feet. We just enough time to pull in power, we cross over trees. I look out by the left window, the guy pointed aiming a gun at us. We had our spotlight on, and I see muzzle flashes going off. Scared the heck out of me. So we banked hard to the right, banked hard to the right. Then Jim comes up on the radio, he says, I'm at your 6, I'm at your 6. We actually passed over him. We didn't realize we had passed over him. We did.
Jim is Jim Lloyd, the pilot who had gone down. You two have been friends ever since, but at this point, you've never met him. So you hear the pilot saying, I'm at your six. That means he's behind you.
That's right. It means we just passed over him. Mm-hmm. So we turn around. He says, I'm at your six. I'm at your six. As we're turning, we see I see a figure of a guy running. He's got his arms crossed like this. He's in an American flight suit. So I figure that's him. He says, come right 10 degrees, big mother. So he turned right. He said, no, your other right. And that's a common mistake that pilots make.
Because it was his right, but not your right.
Yeah, but we know exactly what I meant, because that's what happens. We just switched our train at Fallon, Nevada. That happens at Fallon, Nevada all the time. So we learned that. So as soon as he said, your other right, and there's exactly what I meant. So he came there. Now he's scared because now he's going to show a light. He said, show a light, damn it, show a light. He's afraid to turn on his light because his light, he has a strobe light, but it's sewn into the collar. Now he's got to show a light, so he didn't want to show a light. But I said, hey, man, if you want to get rescued, you got to show a light. So he finally turned the light on and saw the strobe. As soon as the strobe went on, about four of the strobes went off, immediately went off in the area. So they were watching. I sent a groomer, he was behind me, he said, sir, he says, there's the first strobe that went off. Sure enough, that was him.
So I just want everybody to understand, you know, what you guys are dealing with. He turns his on, and then immediately four others go on. So for you, in the dark, you could have picked any one of those five. You got an 80% chance of picking the wrong one and dying.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
But because one of your crew members saw the first one and knew where it was, that's where you went.
Yeah.
Were you at all hesitant to go to that one?
No, because we saw him running. So we headed that direction, and then we saw him running. So it was him then.
They knew it was him, but they still had to find a way to retrieve him and escape safely. And that was nowhere near a sure thing. Head over to hometownheroesradio.com or the Hometown Heroes Facebook page for a short video of Harry Zinser FaceTiming with Jim Lloyd, that pilot he rescued 50 years ago in Vietnam. And Hometown Heroes will be right back after this. Do you ever have those moments where you realize you've been settling for less than the best for far too long? Sometimes we just accept the status quo without looking around for better ways to do things. And I've got to tell you, when it comes to your money, I believe I found a better way with EECU. Take a look at myeecu.org and you'll see why. EECU is not a bank. It's a nonprofit credit union that's all about taking care of you, the member. That's one of the reasons EECU just keeps growing and growing, close to 300,000 members now in 10 different California counties, over 30,000 ATMs, free mobile banking. And what I really love is how EECU always goes above and beyond to serve the community. In 2013, the leadership and generosity of EECU helped establish Central Valley Honor Flight. More than 1,000 veterans now have gotten to see their memorials in Washington, D.C. for free. And that's just one example of the community involvement EECU takes oh so seriously. Pick up the phone and become a member today. 1-800-538-3328. That's 800-538-3328.